Hi there, my name is Anne. I'm 36 years old. Today is Thursday, May 3rd, 2018. I'm recording this in Santa Rosa, California, and I have the pleasure of speaking with Katie Phillips, who is the volunteer coordinator here at the Living Room non-for-profit, and she is my contact here today for Levi's Community Day.
Hello!
So tell us a little bit about yourself, Katie.
Well, I am a Santa Rosa native. I was born and raised in Santa Rosa, so this community is definitely close to my heart. I started volunteering with the Living Room, which we're a day center for homeless women and kids. I started volunteering here in May 2010, so this will be my 8-year anniversary with the organization. I started as a volunteer, and then within a year, I was hired on to be kind of relief staff, and then the assistant to the mother and child program that we have here, and then eventually I actually became the coordinator for the mother and child program. Then I took a little break, and then returned about 6 months later to be relief staff and a volunteer again. And then just 2 years ago, we moved locations to our new campus, which is where we are today. And then I became the volunteer coordinator officially to help with the new changes and the new needs in our new campus.
Yeah, you guys have grown a lot.
We really have. We've been an organization for 25 years in Santa Rosa, helping families and women in Sonoma County. But in the past 2 years, we've experienced a ton of growth within the program, within staff, and it's been pretty amazing to be a part of.
Mm-hmm. So one thing before we get into the questions that is kind of fun to mention is that you and I have known each other for,
it's true.
I think, almost 20 years.
Yeah, 20 years.
And this kind of happened magically because Levi's usually spends an entire day giving back to the community in San Francisco locally, and because of the fires in Napa, Sonoma, Santa Rosa, we wanted to track everybody out here.
Yeah, and you guys chose us while I was on maternity leave, so I didn't even have, we didn't have anything to do with this happening. It just happened.
No, but I'm so glad you texted me.
Yeah.
And, you know, hey, do you know anything about this? Are you going to be involved?
Can you be the team leader?
Yes, I can.
Yeah, it's been a joy to see you again, my friend.
I know. It's been too long. It's good. So, let's have some questions for you, Katie. So you talked a little bit about it, but when and why did you start getting involved in the Living Room? You said 8 years ago?
Yeah, 8 years ago. So I had been living in San Francisco. You took my old apartment.
I did.
So you were familiar with what was going on. So I graduated from USF, University of San Francisco, with a degree in sociology, and I had been doing an internship for a couple years at an organization called Clara House, which was a transitional housing facility for homeless families. So I worked with, they had an incredible program there. It had a therapeutic preschool, infant to preschool care on site. They had recovery services, case management, and then there were 14 apartments on site for families to live for 2 years. Really comprehensive wraparound services. So that's what I'd been doing. I was really loving the work. And when I moved back to Santa Rosa, I wanted to get involved in another organization and keep pursuing that work. And so someone recommended, oh, you should check out the Living Room. It just so happened it was a couple blocks away from my house. So it was a easy thing to check out. So I went and I applied to be a volunteer in the Mother and Child program. And I just really fell in love with the work. And it was very different work than the stuff I'd been doing at Clara House, which those families had kind of come through their crises and landed in a really great program. So they were going to be there for 2 years. They could get support going to school. They had a savings program. Living Room, very different. So the Living Room, my mentor, Carla Fittipaldi, who was the mother and child coordinator when I started, she described it as triage. People often come to the Living Room in complete crisis. So it was a big adjustment to go from working with families who had the ground underneath their feet to families who were, you know, that might have been the first day that they were homeless and they had no idea where to go. And so they're coming to the Living Room to get a roadmap to what it means to be homeless in Sonoma County. So really, really different, much, much higher levels of trauma and crisis and people experiencing, you know, people at some of their lowest points in their life. So mm-hmm. I had not been exposed to that in the same way. But I really did. I fell in love with the families and the kids and the women that we work with and an amazing staff too. So I've stuck around, and I'm really thankful to be able to work here. And I just had a baby, and being pregnant at the living room was also amazing because it's all women who work here. Uh-huh. You know, we're surrounded by mothers and women and children, so everyone was so supportive of my experience.
And oh, I didn't even think
it
about
was
that.
Just yeah, it was really special mm-hmm. to be pregnant here and not to have my baby. You know, everyone asks me how she's doing. And it's a special place. Mm-hmm.
So the organization has grown a lot since mm-hmm. you started. You said you started with a staff of two, and now you're...
Yeah, there were three administrative staff when I started, and then two official program staff. Mm-hmm. And so we have two programs. We have the mother and child program, and then we have the women's program. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was bare bones. We've always depended on volunteers, so the living room was started by a group of like 20 to 30 volunteers. And then slowly became more of an official organization. It got official nonprofit status in 2003. It's grown progressively over those 25 years. But yeah, this is definitely the fullest staff we've ever had.
So that's great because it shows that you're able to support a paid staff of, you said nine?
Yes, I believe it's nine right now.
So where do you guys get most of your funding?
So 85% of our funding is private donors and small grants, well, like small family grants and then stuff like that. So we...
just angels that want
to
give.
Yes, and a lot of that, I believe, has to do with the fact that we were started by a church. And we've maintained those relationships with other church networks. Mm. So we get a lot of support from First Presbyterian and the Unitarians and the First Methodist Church and Center for Spiritual Living, all these really fantastic faith-based organizations. We are secular, so we're no longer connected to the, we're not a faith-based organization anymore, but we were founded on a lot of principles that are from those, have those roots. And I think we've done a really excellent job of maintaining that philosophy that when people come here, they need to be here and there's no judgment. And mm-hmm. that when someone walks through the door, our first priority is to really treat them with kindness and compassion and love and to try and restore some dignity and to treat people with dignity. Because when you're homeless, that's one of the first things I think that can go. And you can, the depression and the trauma that can come and the anxiety that comes with being homeless is tremendous. We've held on to that as the foundation of everything we're doing. And I think the community really, they've supported that, in an incredible way. We just moved to this new campus. And we were able to do that because of private donations. We get very little state or federal funding, less than 15%.
Wow.
So it's very much by the grace of the community, which, with the fires happening, definitely it has impacted that. Our big fundraising ask event was supposed to be the week after the fires hit. And we definitely had to cancel that. I think four or five board members lost their homes. Several volunteers lost their homes.
Yeah.
So we were impacted in that, donors lost their homes. So the whole community has been shaken up in a pretty crazy way. Having the neighborhood I grew up in, Coffee Park, was completely leveled. Both the houses I lived in when I was a kid are gone.
Oh, God, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Sorry to hear. That's awful.
It's a very strange thing, and it's really interesting too to see in our community, one of the most affluent neighborhoods, Fountain Grove, leveled, and then a very working class neighborhood, Coffee Park, totally leveled. In both of those communities, there were established homeless encampments too, and those people had to get out, and they lost everything too. So these fires did not discriminate, and they've really affected everyone across the board. But the folks who have more insurance and a family support network and all those things, like they're gonna be okay. It's really hard and it's super traumatic. We have two of our chefs who are their husband and wife team, Bob and Joni, and they lost their home They do like all the food shopping for us. They've been a huge piece in kind of coordinating our food program. We serve breakfast and lunch. And the Monday morning of the fires, they were here cooking breakfast. Their house was gone.
Whoa.
I don't even think they had their dog back at that. They had lost their, like, old deaf dog was still missing. They actually found him, which is, like, an amazing story. But they were here cooking breakfast for everyone. And the living room kind of became a place for people, volunteers, board members, participants. It became just, like, a meeting place to make sure people were okay.
I was going to say, do you feel like after the fires, the different social strata of Santa Rosa, the affluent and the less affluent, have created more of a sense of community after that? Not because a few months have passed at this point.
I think it's hard to say. You know, I think there's a disconnect too in that, you know, people who are people who are on the edge of anyway, you know, whether it was a fire or maybe someone got sick or, you know, they were on the edge of losing, you know, of being homeless.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that always existed. And those people were always on that edge anyway.
And those are the people you're seeing.
Those are the people
here.
We would see regardless of the fire. You know, the fire might be the reason they're here now, but it could have very well have been another circumstance that would have brought them here. And the people on the edge are always forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
And typically not, you know, cared for in the same way. So, I don't know. I mean, I will say the outpouring of love and support and camaraderie and togetherness that happened immediately afterwards was amazing. Like, it was, because we'd all been through this incredibly traumatic event. But I think it's easy to forget, like, I don't live nearby a fire zone. It's very easy to forget sometimes that half the town is burnt up if you don't go in that neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And I know for other people it's still very super, super real if you're passing that every day. Santa Rosa is very spread out.
Right.
So, you know, it's interesting. And, you know, something I think about too is, you know, with our homeless community, there was a housing crisis here beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
People are on the Section 8 wait list for over 5 years. You know, the housing is hard to come by, and now it's really hard to come by, and available housing has, the rents have skyrocketed in a lot of cases. And just the available properties, there just aren't any, and that was the case before, and now it's even harder. So you have, and what's interesting is that before the fires, about 2 years beforehand, the city of Santa Rosa had declared a state of emergency around homelessness, citing that the amount of displaced people that we were seeing was similar to what you'd see in a natural disaster.
And now you have had a natural disaster.
And there's a lot of interesting stuff going on, you know, in, you know, kind of homeless activism around here right now. There was so after the fires, there were all these big encampments underneath the freeway downtown Santa Rosa. Because
mm-hmm.
a lot of people who had been kind of camped out in the places that got really affected, they came downtown. And then that got cleared out and they got moved to another camp. And now that camp just got cleared out. And there's just been this kind of shuffling of people, the people who are the most vulnerable and really highly disabled population. So 60% of our participants here have a disability.
Mm-hmm.
90% of our women have had some kind of domestic violence history. So we're, you know, for the most part, I feel frustrated when I, you know, see dialogue. It's like, oh, it's a choice and get a job. And, you know, it's really not taking into consideration that a huge percentage of folks who are experiencing homelessness have significant disabilities that I don't think if people had that awareness, there would be that kind of dialogue around, you know, just a lack of compassion, really, in some cases. But at the same time, Sonoma County and Santa Rosa has a lot of great services, like the Living Room, like Catholic Charities,
mm-hmm.
like the Redwood Gospel Mission. So there are a lot of resources for people here, but there's always a tipping point.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always people who are going to be hesitant to get services because they're so traumatized. So if we're not dealing with the core issue, which is, I believe, trauma, we're never going to really, you know, solve the actual issue of homelessness. But, you know, there's lots of different philosophies. There's the housing first model, which has become really popular because there's a lot of evidence that suggests if you house people, instead of trying to make them jump through a whole bunch of hoops and say, like, you gotta get sober, you gotta clean up your credit, you got to basically, you know, you have to be a super high functioning human and then we'll give you a house. If you get people housed first and then you offer the services, the success rate is much higher.
Right, and you have one house on the premises that's full-time, and then you have some part-time.
Yeah, so we just opened up some transitional housing, which is a year-long program, and it's 4 beds for 4 single women, and that house is kind of attached to our campus. And then we bought a house across the street, which is permanent supportive housing for a family, which is amazing. And that particular family had been in the shelter for well over a year, the shelter system.
So what's the criteria? How does that family get the house?
So we had an application process just like anything else, you know, and we just picked the family that had the, you know, would be able to pay the rent, would be able to, you know, that we thought was the best fit.
Cool.
And so far it's been really successful. And you know, it's one house, it's one family, one house, but it's a drop in the bucket, and we're excited to see the success.
Yeah, it's a great program. Yeah. And I spent a good 3 hours wielding a pickaxe in their front yard this morning.
It looks really good so far. Yeah.
We'll see at the end of the day what it looks like.
Yeah, but the folks in the transitional housing still have access to all the program support too. Mm-hmm. So, you know, people who are coming here, again, like I said earlier, you know, a lot of people are coming here in crisis.
Yeah.
So when someone walks through the door, we're drop-in, so anyone can just show up. We, you know, have you eaten? You know, if a meal is about to be served, we try and get people fed, because it's really hard to tell your story or, you know, make any kind of decisions if you're hungry. So we do breakfast and lunch every day. Most of the food is donated. We use the food bank. We have a couple grants for the food too, but the average cost of a plate of food here is 82 cents a plate.
Wow.
Which is amazing, because the food is... I get to eat here often for lunch and stuff, and it's really fantastic. We have all volunteer chefs.
Yeah.
They get here at like 7 in the morning, and they are incredible. And they, you know, they really focus on having like fresh, healthy food. Mm-hmm. Again, because we have this super vulnerable population, lots of disabilities, lots of chronic illness. And so they're getting a really well-balanced meal. We did like a survey a while ago that asked people, you know, when you don't come to the living room, where are you eating? And a surprising number of people said they weren't eating.
Wow.
So we're filling like a huge nutritional gap for folks. And a lot of senior women are using our services too. Yeah. And then we have showers and laundry as well, which we didn't have at our old facility, which is really exciting. And then we also have counseling available, drop-in counseling. We give toiletries out daily, so people need little shampoos or soaps, tampons, diapers, wipes, that kind of stuff.
Right.
And then we also do groups and classes. So we have a music group that's really fun, like a popular song singing group, and a knitting class, and a self-esteem group, some parenting groups too, and a writing group. So
you've been here a long time, and you've seen it change a lot, and you've seen it grow. Can you tell me some of your favorite work stories or moments?
Oh, gosh. Well, I just had a baby, so my brain doesn't really work that well anymore, and can't remember past 5 minutes ago. but let me see. I'm trying to think off the top of my head.
Or challenging moments.
You can probably remember that.
Those I bet you can remember.
Well, probably just to generalize. I don't know if I can pull a specific incident out of my hat at this moment. But I would say just seeing the perseverance. Like when I was pregnant here and even now having my kid, it's, you know, there's lots of challenges that come when your body's going through all that stuff. And I had so much support, not only from, you know, my friends who are the staff here, but the moms and the women here. I felt so cared for and so celebrated by the women, you know, of having this very female experience of carrying a child. But, you know, and everyone would, you know, ask me how I was doing and then share their stories of their kids or their sister's kids or, you know, and so I felt very empowered. And then also, you know, seeing our moms here who are staying in the shelter or who are in their car seeing them do it, because there's a lot of anxiety that comes with having a kid, and, you know, can I do it? And seeing how these women do it in circumstances that I can't even imagine, it gave me a lot of hope for myself that I could persevere, and also just to have the support and to be able to ask women with a lot of knowledge and a lot of history about raising kids, about being pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
I just felt like I had this amazing community of support that, you know, I don't know if I would have found that. It's really unique. This mm-hmm. is a unique place. There's no other kind of drop-in center like this in the county.
Right.
And because I've been here a long time, I have established relationships with a lot of the participants, and so it was pretty special to come into the mom club
yeah.
with some moms that I have a ton of respect for.
And your pregnancy almost gives them confidence and the ability to give somebody advice on something when,
yeah.
when they probably don't get that very often.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I mean, this program is really unique in that I feel like, you know, when you're homeless and you're in the system, you have to deal with so much bureaucracy. You have to deal with people who are burnt out. And I think that's something that makes Living Room really unique, is that our approach to working with people is really relationship-based. It's about establishing trust. It's about opening up. And I think that that is what makes it really unique.
So unfortunately, Katie was actually just called to her other job of being a mom and had to suddenly leave. And of course, we hope everything is okay with her daughter. That's the reality of being a parent. Emergencies do come up, and I know that the work that Katie and the other staff and volunteers here at the Living Room are doing is clearly making a difference in homeless and at-risk women and their children here in Santa Rosa. Katie's not here right now, but I'd like to say, having known her for 20 years, I'm really proud of the woman that she's become and the work that she's doing here. From myself and on behalf of Levi Strauss and Company, thank you to Katie, and thank you to the Living Room.